This is CliffCentral.com.
I still think Bob Marley's cool. I know some people will probably try to fight me on this, but it's one of those, like, he's one of those artists slash bands that you'll be, like, traveling anywhere in the world, you'll go to a backpackers or whatever it is, and you'll always hear Bob Marley within 45 minutes of being there.
It's like, yeah.
It's like an unwritten rule of something. It's timeless.
The timeless part I definitely agree with. You know, there's, like, it's always a good time to hear a Bob Marley song. It's not like typical bubblegum music that has an expiration date.
Because he was quite hardcore in that some of his songs were very revolutionary for various reasons, but he was also like quite a bit of a softie. He had some nice love songs.
Yeah, he was kind of a mushy guy. Like, yeah. He just wanted everybody to love each other and to get along, you know. He was all about the mush.
See, I don't want to even comment because I'll sound crazier than I already do, but
it's far too late for that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
You know, like, I have this weird thing with Bob Marley. Like, he gives me the creeps.
Okay.
I had like a weird dream about him as a kid, and ever since then, just hearing his music, seeing his picture creeps me out still.
What was he doing in the dream?
It's
such a long, weird story, but I just don't like him. Even talking about him right now freaks me out.
You've said a lot of things in your time on this show.
I swear, don't.
I actually seriously think that is the strangest thing. What's not to like about Bob Marley?
It's just, you know how some people have a bad experience
with... Shows in the doll where he...
He hurt me emotionally and mentally. Like, some people have a bad experience with dogs when they're a kid and emotionally scars them. I had a bad experience with Bob Marley in a dream, and now he's emotionally scarred me. One of the weird things. But can I talk about rather a more... better person in my mind, because he's my new friend in my head, and that's David Beckham. Now, he's many things, of course. He's a world famous footballer, he's a father, he's a style icon, and he's also the man who's made tattoos mainstream. So he's also redefined, he's refined and he's cool, just like his own whiskey, the Hake Clubman. It's about changing the game, breaking the rules and doing things differently, and as if we haven't harped on about it because it's so cool, we're still going to carry on about the fact that Gareth Cliff had an unconventional, unradio conversation with David Beckham about Hake Clubman, his family, being an entrepreneur, and also breaking the rules. So if you haven't yet, you can download the podcast now on cliffcentral.com, and just know that Hake Clubman, not for sale to person under the age of 18. So enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, totally recommend that podcast because it's just so casual. That guy is so cool. And all the things Sia just said, I do agree with. He comes across as like a really great guy. Him and Gareth chat like they've known each other for a long time. This is very, very nice.
Yeah, you can't even hate on Bex for being so perfect. You can't even be jealous. You just have to like be like, okay, you're awesome, Bex. Not like Bob Marley, who you can easily hate.
Yeah, exactly. Bob Marley is just such a polarizing character. Whoever would have thought?
Like, don't bring it up on a radio show. It's divisive. We're going to lose listeners.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for being emotionally supportive.
I desperately want to know. I mean, if it's really personal, it sounds like it is, but I mean, like, you've had a dream that has made you loathe Bob Marley.
I'm really putting this entire thing, and I'm trying to summarize it into like 30 seconds. Yeah. But basically, I was like 7 years old, and my sister was big into reggae. She was going through a phase. And I don't know. I just had this dream where if Bob Marley touches you, he will spread some weird disease onto you. That's my 7 year old mind. He touched me in the dream. I woke up crying. And ever since then, it's just been a thing. I don't like
it. Fair enough.
No, not fair enough, Gord.
If you're 7 and then that shit will.
Snap. You are 12
don't
now.
Like
snap
it.
Out of it.
No, I'm playing out that discussion. What's going on in actual news, not phobias?
Okay, you want to talk about a polarizing individual? Mark Zuckerberg is still in the news. Oh, yes. Today is a great day to get into this conversation because we have In the left corner, we've got Gord Laws. Are you a big fan of Zuckerberg? No.
No. Elon Musk.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Elon
Musk.
You're
still part of that whole Zuckerberg, such a bad oak.
Dude, I agree. I liked and shared your post about, like, is it really that important that they have information on this thing that you're voluntarily using for free? Like, you just anything you don't like, you just decide I like. Because of Elon Musk, who is awesome.
I like Elon Musk.
Right. Okay.
I'm not even getting back into Elon Musk. Let's talk Zuckerberg, please.
All right.
Who I'm neutral on.
Okay.
See, well, if you can't be neutral on Zuckerberg.
I just don't know enough about him to hate him.
You've either
got to
like him or hate him. Yeah. Is
exactly.
that what you're saying, Ben?
It is like Bob Marley. There's no neutral on Bob Marley.
Yeah. Regophobia is a real thing. Yeah.
Regophobia.
I am folding my arms at this point.
No, I mean, I don't care enough about Zuckerberg for it to be a thing. That's my point.
Okay, so we all know that Facebook has been enduring a crisis of trust. This is ever since it was revealed that Cambridge Analytica, who are a data firm with ties to President Donald Trump's 2016 election campaign, reportedly assessed information about 50 million Facebook users without their knowledge. So it's all about data privacy. Mm. And after repeated calls for Mark Zuckerberg to appear before Congress, he has now decided that he will indeed testify before U.S. Congress. Facebook sources revealing that the 33-year-old CEO has come to terms with the fact that he will have to testify before Congress within a matter of weeks, and now Facebook is currently planning the strategy for his testimony. The pressure from lawmakers, the media, and the public has become too intense to justify anything less. Now, the Facebook sources also believe that Zuckerberg's willingness to testify will also put pressure on Google CEO Sundar Pichai and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey to do the same, because Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley has officially invited all three CEOs to a hearing on data privacy on the 10th of April.
Yeah, but I heard Zuckerberg's scales show when he gets nervous.
Okay,
so
he's a lizard.
If he gets a grilling in the courtroom, I think there's going to be some scenes.
He's a bit socially awkward, right? And again, I haven't been following him on his live broadcasts.
Well, socially awkward is the least of our concerns right now.
No,
when
I mean, in terms of getting grilled at a court case type of a vibe, he's not like
going to stand up for
himself. I think it's going to be very interesting because, as Gareth said when he went to Silicon Valley, Zuckerberg is held in such high esteem, like he's some sort of demigod, and he has his aides, and his people will say, Mark's so great at everything. But when you're in the court of law, law does not give a toss about who likes you, who shares you, how much you're worth. Law is law. Yeah. Testimony is testimony.
Just a bit like developing rigophobia at age 7. I heard about Silicon Valley. I heard about Silicon Valley when I was in high school, and I imagined these two massive silicone boobs, and in between them, that's where silicone.
That's where you drive to go to an office.
I just imagined this place where all of technology is between two giant tits.
I'm also surprised the porn industry wasn't something that like latched on to Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Boys are weird. Anyway, can I talk about your favorite person?
Boys are
You're
weird.
A boy.
I was never a boy. I hatched out of a disco ball and I became the stashing young man you see in front of you.
Yeah.
Never a boy.
All right.
Can we talk about Gord's favorite person, Elon Musk?
Yeah.
Okay, as long as I don't get in trouble from Ben for having an opinion.
No, we like trouble between you and Ben.
There's some weirdness happening in Elon Musk's family because...
Oh my gosh, I heard about this story.
Is it freaky? Okay, Elon Musk's father has now had a child with his stepdaughter. And the father's calling this all part of God's plan.
Yeah,
His own stepdaughter.
There's an entire genre of this on Pornhub, apparently.
Wait a minute.
That is gross.
I've been told about this and have no personal experience with it whatsoever. But from what I've been told, alleged hearsay, it's typically like a woman, a quote-unquote MILF, who's probably like 35 or maybe 40, and her 29-year-old son then having like a storyline where it's like incestuous.
Yes, incest.
But they're like the same age.
Well, no, this is not the case
at all. No, sure, in real life it's different. But in the alleged porn that I've read about...
Oh!
Oh, because you read up on porn.
Alleged anyway, porn that you've read about.
On disgrace
Somebody
forums.
Do a quick like search history on Gord's laptop.
Just ask Zuckerberg to see what Gord's doing.
I don't want to at this point. Elon Musk's father, Errol Musk, he, of course, is the father of Elon Musk, as I was saying. And then this past weekend, fathered a son with 30-year-old Yana Bezaidenhout, who is the daughter of his former wife, Heidi. Now, Yana, who is Elon Musk's youngest stepsister, was 4 years old when her mother wed Errol, a union that ended up lasting 18 years before the pair got divorced. So I'm sorry, you saw this child grow up in front of you, and
As a daughter role, let's be honest. Yeah, I mean, she didn't just grow up as like a young, attractive girl.
Yes,
she grew up in his eyes as a daughter.
Oh. He was already a fully grown man.
Yana is now 30 years old, but Errol is 72 years old.
Oh my God, he's one and a he's double and a half times her age. Double and a half times.
I always
her
thought
age.
Errol was just a shifty name. Like, no, I don't trust Errol.
42 years age difference 42. Between them.
You were 42 when she was born.
Yeah, that is disturbing on multiple levels.
I'm not 42 yet, but I'll get there soon enough.
My maths might be bad. So he was 46 when Yana got into his life and started raising her, and now they have a child together.
It's like I'm not even 42, but if someone was born now, I would not be thinking, give that one a little bit of time and I'll be keen. I don't even like people who are like, I don't even like millennials.
But this is his justification. He's saying that he did not look at Yana as a stepdaughter because she lived away from the family for the majority of her childhood.
Okay, well, that's fine then.
He also said...
sorry for judging you, Errol.
Sorry, Errol.
You should have brought that up right at the beginning.
We had this one all wrong, Errol.
That's it. He says that they reconnected more recently after Yana had gone through a terrible breakup. So he says we were just lonely, lost people. Mm. One thing led to another. You call it God's plan or nature's plan. Now, Errol does not live with Yana and the boy who's 10 months old, and his name is Elliot Rush Musk, but has referred to the boy as an exquisite child, and Yana is a delightful girl and a wonderful mother.
Is that her in the picture I'm looking at over your shoulder? Okay, because she's really pretty. Like, what? Why would you want to date a 70-something-year-old if you're 30?
She was lost and lonely, and Errol was in the area.
Not that your looks would be a reason to do it regardless, but I read the authorized biography of Elon Musk, and they don't go into a great deal of detail. You can see it's something he didn't want to talk about with the lady that wrote the book much, but you just get the impression, his home life and his family life, you just get the impression that his dad was like a weird dude, and weird shit was going on, and that Musk is like, obviously, Elon is obviously like made a point of trying to just leave it behind.
Well, back in a Rolling Stone interview in 2017, Elon actually called his father a terrible human being. And one of Errol's other children, Alexandra, actually now does not talk to her father either, actually calling him insane and mentally ill. So this is just odd. Supposedly, the entire Musk family believes Errol is getting senile and should go into an old age home, not have a life of fun and entertainment.
Can't be senile if she's digging it at 30.
But I think as soon as you start saying that it was God's plan,
maybe
it wasn't really your plan.
Alarm bells there immediately.
Red flags.
Get you in the White House though.
Having a kid.
Okay, well let's clean this up with some actual good innovation news. We at CliffCentral.com are all about innovation, meeting the forefront of great technology. That's why we created the Cliff Central Unwired Earphones. Mm-hmm. See how much?
Well, they go for $550.
Okay, well, hold that thought, because let's get you into a little secret. For today only, TakeALot.com is running a daily deal on these said earphones. Usually, as Sia would say, you get your hands up for $550, but today only, $499.
Oh, hey now.
That's 51 Rand less, Gord.
That's a saving of 51 Rand.
Oh, yes, $499. Don't miss out on this daily deal. Visit takealot.com right now.
Do it.
Drops running order.
I would never I would never say that I regret my purchase because it's one of the best investments I've ever made, but if I'd known they were going to discount it today, I might have waited.
Yeah, but then would the wait have been worth 51 Rand? No. You wanted it in your hands.
I'd pay 51 Rand to have had it a day sooner.
It's like Errol. You wanted it right now. Couldn't wait.
You weren't willing to wait 60 years.
Gosh.
Oh, man, that is so weird.
You see, I feel like there's some sort of weird, relation to a successful or famous person and just weird family members.
Yeah, it's like odd enough if you've got a stepchild that's like, you know, for some reason really old in the equation, and she's 15 years younger than you, and you know, you're 45 and she's 30, and it's like from some sort of weird, I can't even work out the maths on that, but it's weird enough marrying your former stepchild when there's not a 42-year age difference.
Wow.
I just got played out.
Sure. This is a thing now.
I wish I could play Ben out. I'm just going to start singing when I don't like his 4-hour rant on cricket.
Four-hour rant. Sorry, I do a sports feature here. I spoke about cricket for 4 minutes.
It was three stories, of which 27 minutes of your half an hour was cricket, and then they covered briefly nothing in the next 3 minutes.
I think you're letting the power get to you, Ben.
Great, I see bad math is contagious around this place. You guys
it
have no
was
concept.
Not Ooh, are you four sure? minutes.
And it was not. It was one story. Anyway.
I really need to be played out. We can play you out, yeah.
Alright, okay. What else we got, Mubs?
Okay, so are you alone, lonely? Because you are going to die.
Let's get away from Errol now. Let's move away from Errol Musk.
And how is that just the natural thing? If you're alone and you're lonely, you'll die.
Okay,
he must have just liked his Musk.
I'm being just a little bit dramatic, but the odds of you dying after a heart attack or stroke do go up significantly if you are lonely. This is according to new studies conducted in Britain. The apparent link between loneliness and heart disease, it does, however, disappear once other risk factors, including smoking, drinking, poor diet, and all that other horrible stuff are taken into consideration. This is according to a study that has monitored nearly 480,000 men and women in Britain for over 7 years. And even after lifestyle habits are taken into consideration, social isolation, which is time actually spent alone, boosts the risk of dying by about 30% in people who suffer a stroke or heart attack. Social isolation, but not loneliness, remained as an independent risk factor for mortality. The researchers were led by Christian Hakulinen. He is a professor at the University of Helsinki. So, yeah, shame. Find yourself someone, stat.
Well, you know, these surveys always want to be provocative in how they go about things, and they want to rattle people's cages. But I think just because you're single doesn't mean this applies to you. So, for example, I think if you have a good support system, if you have friends that are always around you, if you have a sister who calls and checks up on you, this doesn't apply because I don't think you're necessarily lonely.
No, they're not talking about single status. They're talking about social isolation. So if you are spending the majority of your time by yourself, and this factors in the fact that you don't see your parents, you don't see sisters, siblings, you don't have friends. So this goes beyond having a sex buddy.
Yeah.
No, this is just social isolation. I mean,
that I believe.
Yeah.
I read a study that said like mice struggle, they're like less inclined to get addicted to cocaine if they've got other mice to hang out with. Like loneliness is a big factor in like drug addiction, apparently.
Yeah, I think they've done a couple of those studies. There was one that also took into consideration your immediate environment, whether it's a positive environment or a negative environment with the mice. And those that were living in a negative environment were more likely to become addicted to said drug, as opposed to those that were being stimulated because their immediate environment was positive.
But I think of in a less hectic example, how many times you are in a conversation with someone and they say, just calm down, or it's not that bad. You know what I mean? That's the need for support, and that's the need for having people around you. Imagine if you were alone and how stressed out you'd be, how freaked out you'd be.
You need a caring person to dismiss your problems and tell you that it's all in your mind.
Well, we know that there have been, you know, there has been information written about how suicide rates escalate over the holiday period for people who do live in isolation, because that is when they feel it the most.
Yeah, they see everyone else having the family vibe.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I'm willing to believe that there's a link here between social isolation and heart health.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
It's like saying you've had a big health incident that could be fatal to anyone, and some people have got people to help them out afterwards and other people don't.
Mm, exactly.
But a loneliness factor is huge in life in general. I mean, like, even if you've moved to like a really brilliant place, and even if you do have a couple of people there, that's kind of what brings a lot of people home from immigrating or moving to, say, Cape Town from Joburg, that kind of thing. You might be in a brilliant place, but you don't have your people.
Yeah, you don't have your squad.
I was really sad in Cape Town. Very sad.
Was it related to not having your squad or just because you didn't like the vibe?
What, Mabali? You're going to judge me. I'm just trying to chime in here.
No, your family are from the Western Cape. How were you sad when you were there? I don't understand.
Because family are just one element of life. Your friends are your day-to-day life.
Yeah, sure.
Your peers on various levels.
But that's my question. Like, was the main thing about it that you just didn't like the vibe there, or was it because you were missing your squad?
But it was kind of both, yeah.
Because I was the same.
Like, I was quite shy, plus the people I actually really like weren't there.
I feel exactly the same. But I didn't hate Cape Town. I just thought it was like a bit of a letdown compared to the dream.
Yeah, it was a Matthew Perry movie, basically.
Wow.
It's a lot of hype, but ultimately,
you don't expect those to be awesome.
Oh, no.
But I completely agree with Ben. It's like
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Not having your squad. Yes, exactly. Not having your squad is a big thing, even if you're in what ostensibly is a. It's better to be in a slightly shitty place with your people than in like a utopian place without them.
True. True. And now I have Britney Spears stuck in my head. My loneliness is killing me.
Okay. All right.
Move on.
Speaking of killing, it was just another day for another murder accused in court. I am, of course, talking about Jason Roder. Yes.
Just juggling these trials.
Jason Roder. That guy needs all the hype you can get right now.
Ben, gold star of the day goes to you.
Are we sniffing something today? Like, there's just something special about this morning. But anyway. So the court yesterday, the Western Cape High Court, yesterday heard about how if Susan Roder's full body weight had been suspended by a single cord of the curling iron from the bathroom door, the cord would have failed and snapped. Because remember, Jason says that his wife committed suicide by hanging herself, but the head of the mechanical and metallurgical engineering subsection of the SAPS, Colonel Daniel Pullman, he reiterated during cross-examination that he did a number of tensile force tests to determine whether the electrical cable that was found around Susan's neck was used to hang her. She was found hanging from a hook on the back of the bathroom door of the Speer Wine Estate. She and her husband had been attending a conference at the Wine Estate. Jason has pleaded not guilty to charges of murder and defeating the ends of justice for staging her suicide. So Pullman said, look, his test revealed that a single cord would have failed with a weight of more than 40 kilograms, while a double cord would have held around 77 kilograms. So he's saying it's just not scientifically possible that this woman, is it hanged or hung herself?
She hanged.
Yeah, a person is hanged, a picture is hung. That's the old way to
remember. Okay. But either way.
Some men are hung, but not when they don't die from it usually.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's usually not.
But yeah, a person is hanged.
Okay, yeah. So this person here just saying, no, not possible that she hanged herself because the cord and taking her body weight into consideration, it would have failed, would have snapped.
Now, back in the day, if you were a witch, you were weighed against a duck or something.
Monty Python.
I mean, that was good enough for trial. I mean,
they checked if you floated.
Yeah, if you floated or whatever. Now, this seems to me that we should be applying that sort of swiftness to this case here, because this cord thing, for me, just basically proves the fact that suicide was never on the table here.
Yeah.
Wasn't
it was against the bathroom door.
We also kind of saw it from the start without the science expert coming in.
I know, but Ben, you know how the criminal justice system works. You have to follow a certain procedure.
Yeah, sure, but I just think someone should throw this Jason Roeder into the river. If he floats, he's guilty.
was it if you floated, you were not guilty, or you were guilty?
No, if you floated, you were guilty.
Floating is damning. Yeah. Okay.
That is, I mean, everyone floats. What the hell?
What a coincidence. Very small stones.
What a coincidence.
I hate to turn this conversation to something slightly more morbid, but speaking about this, there's now this report that's actually come out from someone who is concerned about the state of police in the country and not in the normal, you know, cries that a lot of people have about police. But it's about how, in specifically looking at violent serial killers and rapists, we, South Africa, have an average of 300 new cases each year, and many of those perpetrators are never caught. And so looking at those numbers, South Africa ranks among the world's worst three countries after the US and Russia for several murders and rapes. Like, as much as we look at all of these cases, and yes, it's good and interesting to see how it all rolls out, but when you think about that and you let that sink in for a minute, 200 and 300 new cases each year, many of these perpetrators are never caught, people slip through cracks. This is scary.
Yeah.
And then people are surprised when victims don't report these incidents. They're like, oh, well, why didn't you report it when it happened? Because the system is flawed and is hugely not in favor of the victim.
Sure.
You know, like, this report also explains that what also makes this problem worse is the loss of highly skilled police officers due to poor pay and huge workloads as well. At its peak, and I think this is just looking at a specific division, which is the police's investigative psychology section. At its peak, it had 7 forensic psychologists who assisted in profiling and tracking and arresting some of the country's criminals. And these, you know, if we're looking at serial killers, these are people who really are twisted in their thinking. They don't just go out and commit a murder, but they'll think and they'll follow someone for weeks and they'll know how to stalk them. And now this police section doesn't even have one. They have 0 at all. So from 7 highly skilled forensic psychologists, we have no one who in this particular division is going after these rapists and killers. It's actually very, very scary.
And now the rapists and killers who listen to radio, now that have heard that, are less likely to...
Well, I think if someone is already twisted, they're already on the path. But it's just really sobering to think about the fact that, for example, there's someone known here in Gauteng as the Butfontein plumber rapist who has raped 55 people, 40 of them are schoolgirls. They're still somewhere out there. There's someone in Durban called the Westville rapist who has raped 12 women outside of Durban. And scroll rapist who has raped 11 women around Pretoria. Like, I don't want to carry on with this list, but I think it's just something. Sometimes we need to be faced with reality to understand what we're dealing with in this country. So this report, what struck me about it is it called South Africa the ticking time bomb when it comes to violent serial killers and rapists.
And it's similar to teachers, in that good cops, you lose them because they don't have the opportunity or the recognition that they deserve. And they also, you know, the reputation of police is so bad because there are some really bad ones. A friend of mine is a state prosecutor, and she's really passionate about what she does, and she's really passionate about justice, etc. And she constantly posts about police officers who just go way above and beyond, and like so passionate and working around the clock and like fully believe in the ideals of policing, and there's lots of them, but the really cuck ones take so much of the attention that you're a cop, you're a corrupt, lazy dickhead. It's like some of them are as legit as cops anywhere.
Why do we do that, though? Why do we like to focus on the negative?
Well, some of the negative is really negative, to be
fair.
Yes,
but I mean...
Yeah, I guess it just makes for more drama, and we crave that kind of stuff. It's like fast food.
Yeah, it's like people also don't like far less inclined to tweet, hey, I got really great takeaways from X restaurant, but are like way super quick to complain if there's a long queue at Woolworths.
Yeah,
because it's the anger and everybody wants to see some sort of conflict and turmoil because we're always at odds with something.
It's very unhealthy.
Yeah, that's just how we're wired. I mean, look at nature. You don't see animals getting along. They want to eat each other the whole time.
Either that or they want to bone each other.
Mm. Exactly.
Well, you eat and you bone, really. Right? So occasionally you sleep, but then you sometimes get eaten or boned.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the worst sleep everyone's ever had.
Sleep is a danger because of things wanting to eat you.
Right. So today is the
especially
day.
Bob Marley.
Today is the day. It's the day of our new exclusive movie screening, Five Fingers for Marseille.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can't wait to hang out with you and the rest of CliffCentral.com crew. Have some popcorn and Coke on us. And you may even get to meet the stars of the movie and the show.
Oh, I see what you did there.
If you don't have tickets yet, unfortunately, we are fully booked. So basically why I'm saying this now is because when CX starts rattling this off at the beginning, you need to be very quick to get onto this list. But don't miss out because you can still watch Five Fingers for Marseille. It hits cinemas in South Africa on April the 6th. We had the main actor, Vuyo Dabula, who plays Tao, in the studio yesterday, was talking to us. So take a listen to that podcast and find out about what a great movie this is. That's Five Fingers for Marseille. Count down with us by using Five Fingers Films as your hashtag. Five Fingers Film. That's
is
your
that
hashtag.
The number five or the word five? Can you use that? Yeah.
The word.
The word.
Well spotted there, Gordon. Yeah. The word, yeah. Five Fingers listen to that film. Podcast. Wow, a very cool interview yesterday. And also, like, when you hear the actors talk about movies that they really care about, and I know I'm saying this and it sounds like a strange thing to hear, but sometimes you get actors who just go through press junkets and they talk about projects they're working with. But yesterday was such a great interview. And I think what Vuyo actually really reminded us how difficult these movies are to make. It's a locally produced movie. It's a great story. I think now also with like land and everyone's quite topical around this kind of stuff, definitely going to be worth seeing this one. Five Fingers for Marseille. Yeah,
there have been some really like brave and artistically, I don't know, artistically artistic movies coming out of South Africa like in recent years. The film industry here is maturing really like impressively. You know, it's not all just like high bubblegum treffer star high school romance, yes. Like lighthearted crap. There's some really good stuff coming out. I watched Ready Player One last night.
It's what
like
is
gonna
that?
Be the biggest. It's a Steven Spielberg thing. It's like the biggest CGI. It's based on a book, and it's like it's not anything like Avatar, but it's on that level of like we properly push the boundaries of like visual awesomeness. It's basically in the future, everyone plays a video game. And it's like the fate of the world depends on this video game where everything looks and feels like the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. I'm not going to summarize it because Ben will play me out, but it's gonna be properly massive. And like it's just amazing how special effects are like yassi.
Oh, days. Yeah.
So yeah, look out for that one. It opens in like a week, and it's a more of a spectacle.
But if you're Steven Spielberg, there's got to be two ways of looking at this. Firstly, do you really want to keep making stuff because you made such great stuff and you're like, yeah, I've done everything I need to do? Or you go, shit, I'm Steven Spielberg. Everything I touch has to be absolutely incredible. Otherwise, my name's going to get ruined.
It's a really popular book. So it's one of the, and it's a really spectacular like thing. So I think he picks his projects obviously quite carefully, not just
sure,
making it
but
for
he
the
would
sake
really,
of it.
He would really need to though, because if he picks up a Matthew Perry movie or something or something along those lines. I mean, if he does the story of Bob Marley, for instance.
Yeah, of course. I mean, a terrible biopic of someone uninteresting like
and
Bob Marley.
All the regophobics would hate him, and yeah. Then everyone forget about E.T. and all the good stuff he ever did.
But
I love that I can rely on all of you for emotional support.
Well,
thank
I mean,
you.
Just, yeah, and if you ever, God forbid, have a heart attack or a stroke, we'll see you through.
Okay.
But to add to your question, Ben, if Steven Spielberg ever did produce something shit, do you think the world would have the balls to say so?
Ah,
well, the box
yes,
office will say so.
That's smart.
Because, you know, he is so. Steven Spielberg, and yep. People, like, when they hear Steven Spielberg, they immediately assume, well, it's going to be a
that's
good
half
movie.
Your ticket
obviously,
right
it's
there,
going
yeah.
To be great.
But that's just it. Gord, to Mavis's point, it wouldn't even show bad in the box office because everyone's already been bought into the process and the hype.
Mm.
Yeah. But there's, like, expectation. I mean, these dudes have got, like, they know it's going to be big, but how big is the question? But, I mean, has Steven Spielberg ever made anything that was, like, either massive, either very disappointing or even utterly dire?
Ooh, now we have to log on to IMDb to get a list of Steven's movies because I can't remember this from the top of my head.
He must be old now as well. He must be well into his 60s, at least.
He is...
almost old enough to date Errol's...
I think he's actually 70-something.
He's good to go. 71. To have a questionable child.
He's 71.
He's old enough to date his stepdaughter. So he's 71.
It was the other... Woody Allen did that.
Yeah, he's 71, so he's not a spring chicken anymore. And, like, yeah, he's legit as hell. Apparently, James Cameron is making, like, many Avatar sequels. And, like, they're about to start coming out. But I think it's 4 or 5 sequels that are planned. I don't know. The Oak's a bit...
Was it a big enough hit to prequel?
What?
I don't know. All I know is that the main thing about that is that it was the first really big, proper, massive 3D movie.
Wait.
Avatar kind of co-launched the modern era of 3D, which was half of its success. It did look great for the time. The story was a bit shite, I thought.
Wait, but when you're asking about Avatar, which is, like, the highest grossing movie currently?
I don't know if it still is, but it was. It did break the record when it was out. Yeah, it did. It broke James Cameron's other record of Titanic.
Which was Titanic, if I'm not mistaken.
I think something else, James Cameron, I just thought
he was looking at Strange Things in the Depth of the Ocean.
Now, pretty much everything he touches turns to gold as well, at least in terms of box office, if not critical success.
A divorce case.
Terminator.
It wasn't exactly gold.
Terminator, Titanic, the good Terminator's Titanic, Avatar. Like, doesn't make movies that... He's not broke.
So a quick look at Steven Spielberg's list. Schindler's List.
Props.
E.T. Jaws, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Props. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No problem so far. Jones,
yeah.
Jurassic Park.
The good ones.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That was also cool.
That was back in the 70s. Yes. Mm.
That was rad.
All right. Indiana Jones, obviously, blah, blah, blah. Munich, Amistad. Minority Report, yes.
Minority Report was hit and miss. It was okay.
It
wasn't Spielberg level kick ass.
It wasn't a Spielberg kind of thing. Yeah. It was like
Tom Cruise sci-fi.
Yeah, that was like a popular kind of movie that he was going for, that genre. And I think it worked brilliantly.
And then there's things like Munich, which was like not a huge, you know, like it wasn't a big Hollywood bang flash look at me type of movie. Obviously, it probably did pretty well. It was like one of those critically acclaimed things. But he goes for like the big bucks, and then he does like an art project.
Just because he can do both.
Well. Like from the guy that succeeded so much with Indiana Jones movies, and then also made Amistad, Schindler's List, and Munich. Yeah, Spielberg's, he's got his shit together.
Yeah.
I don't mean to bounce around, but yes, Avatar is the highest grossing film of all time.
That's absolutely unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
It beat Zoolander.
Zoolander doesn't even make the top 50
Anchorman
that I'm looking
at.
Zootopia. Zootopia is number 31.
Wait a minute. Really?
Mm-hmm. I saw somewhere someone tweet some shit like that Black Panther is now the biggest movie ever. And I was meaning to look into that to see if it was true. And I forgot. So now this is...
Black Panther is currently at number 12 of the highest grossing films of all time.
And it's still got legs on it.
It'll never be the top because in Asia they don't want to see black superheroes.
Ben, don't speak on behalf of Asians.
What, been what, making blanket
have you what do
today,
you
hey?
Know about the Mad Asians
for white yeah,
that,
men.
That makes you
Black Panther make like it in
such
Asia.
A bold statement?
Have you guys seen the Black Panther movie posters for China?
No, I haven't.
Posters
so
for
this
China.
Is where you need to.
Yes, what does that even
this
mean?
This is where you need to fill us in because I have no idea what you're talking about.
So you guys haven't seen the Black Panther movie posters in China?
No,
posters
tell
in
us.
China.
But yet you are shouting at me like I am just making salacious.
I legitimately thought you said, "Have you not seen the Black Panther movie posters vagina?"
Wait.
If you were to see the Black Panther poster in China, you'll see that you do not see his face. Why?
Because he's wearing a mask?
But why?
No, they've covered him. Yeah. In all other posters, you see the main character.
Whoa, hang on. Who covered him? Is this Asian. One of the pictures that was released by the movie?
Perhaps, you know what? I'll let you work this out for yourself, seeing as you're looking at this picture.
No, who's covered him? Because if this is an...
China.
But he's got a mask on in lots of the movies.
But that's what I'm asking.
They haven't put a
clown
face on
him. That's what I'm asking.
Is
this one of the series of pictures released by the movie and then China opted to use the one with him wearing the mask?
Because the mask is also cool. I mean, it's part of what makes him cool, aside from the whole like black vibe. He's also got a kick-ass mask.
Like, China can't just... change the movie poster. Like, they've got to use what the movie releases.
Why can't they if they don't like what they see? And
no, but what I'm asking
so why
is...
why didn't they use his face, Mubs?
No, that's beside the point. Is this one of the pictures that was released by the movie?
Yeah, it was. It's part of the press kit.
Then.
These movies, these posters.
I didn't think it was an official thing, yeah. But I don't mean to be one of those emotional people, but I'm just hearing Ben's point. Anyway... Secondly, Gord, you just said what?
Sorry, are you acknowledging my point, or are you all just looking at me like when I talk about land claims?
Ben, I am. And I don't get how these people don't see what you're saying.
Oh, so, okay, all right. So we're basing this off of one movie poster.
Actually, there are two.
That is sound.
Black
Three
Panther
that
will
I've
not
seen.
Topple Avatar because of Asian racism.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Sound.
But they adjust these earning things for the economy. For example, obviously a movie that's out in the 80s is never going to make as many dollars as one that's released more recently. But they adjust it economically based on what it would have been worth.
So when was Avatar released?
Like 2009.
Mid-2000s? Oh, late 2000s. Okay.
But they also factor in everything. They factor in the revenue it gets at cinemas. They factor in home video and television income. They factor in merchandising as well. And you think about how much, like, for example, Star Wars merchandise is all about the toys. As opposed to there was, you know, Titanic, there were no toys available.
But it'd be so cool to get a sinking ship as a toy, though. Yeah, okay, little Johnny, here's bath time.
This is a boat that doesn't float. It's not a witch. While you've got the list up, can you regale us with like some of the top 5 or 10?
Okay, top 10 is... Wow, I'm surprised by what's number 10. I'll go from 10 to 1. Number 10 is Frozen, which is like, if you have kids, you know what that's about.
Oh, my.
Number 9 is Star Wars The Last Jedi. Number 8, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Harry
Part
Potter
2.
In there.
Number 9 is the most recent Star Wars movie that's like out for less than a year. It's pretty much a year. Yeah. No, it's not even.
That was released in 2017.
That's because Mickey Mouse has great distribution
tactics. Okay, so 9, Star Wars.
Uh-huh. Number 7, Avengers, Age of Ultron. Number 6, Furious 7. Number 5, The Avengers. Number 4, Jurassic World.
Hang on. Furious 7?
I don't think I've seen that one.
Since when? The popularity of those movies Furious is like one of the most damning indictments of humankind. No. It's Fast and Furious.
It's part of that. 7. Oh. And was released.
Dude,
this one was 2015.
Those movies are so wildly popular.
Sorry,
and there's eight of them.
I thought it was a new Marvel sort of franchise they were trying to sell out.
I was thinking it's like on a Quentin Tarantino vibe. I'm like, Furious 7? I haven't. Just like a bunch of gangsters doing horrible things?
That was the one where they made it and Paul Walker died like during the publicity of it, so that made it extra massive. But that franchise is massive.
No, that was Fast and Furious The Last Goodbye.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure it was that one. Okay, I'm not an expert on Fast and Furious.
Is he joking? It's not called The Last Goodbye.
It's not called The Last
There was one called The Last Ride or some shit like that. Anyway, the Fast and Furious movie's popularity makes me think there's no hope for humanity.
Number 5, The Avengers. Number 4, Jurassic World. Number 3, Star Wars The Force Awakens. And then number 2, Titanic. And number 1, Avatar. And the number 2 and number 1 spots were both done by James Cameron.
Yeah. Damn him.
I know.
I'm surprised the new Star Wars ones are on there just because they're so recent. You know what I mean? Like compared to stuff that's been huge for long on Frozen.
But I guess, like, yeah, I mean, modern movies are going to jump up there. There's got to be like a better way of working this out, like earning per capita with ticket prices. You create an equation around that. Because now, I mean, if you look at sheer box office, inflation and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, are these adjusted? Because they sometimes do adjust them. But what about like number of humans that bought tickets for a cinema to watch this movie in the first 6 months or year of its release? That would be a cool metric for how well a movie's done. How many tickets did you officially sell in the world?
Number of humans. So what if Zuckerberg and his family want to go watch? It's not going to adjust the price.
His entire family are reptiles.
I would like to know which movies the most people went to see in the cinema.
Do you know, I don't ever think there'll be anything that surpasses this. in the likes of, I don't think Michael Jackson will ever be moved from Thriller being the highest grossing album. I don't think you get swarms of people who are invested in something that much anymore. Because I think the way, for example, Harry Potter got into this list, yes, tons of people went and watched in a cinema, but even more people go and experience the movie at the Adventure Park, or they buy the books, or they buy the merchandise, because that's what's factored into all of these costs. But you'll never, Katy Perry, yeah. And I love Beyonce. Beyonce will never release an album, and so many people buy it to the point
but
where
it's the next thing that can break the record.
You see, so much has changed.
It's the next thing that will break the record. Like, when they start, the first time they make movies where, like, a device in your brain makes you live the movie, like you are the guy, when they. Avatar did so well because it was a big spectacle. It was a pretty good movie. It looked really beautiful, but it was the first of this new 3D thing, like not the old shitty red and blue 3D.
Yes.
So when the next massive thing that we can't yet imagine that changes the way we watch movies comes out, and they release a good one by James Cameron or Steven Spielberg or Michael Bay, that will be the thing. It's got to be like big enough to make the top 10 plus new revolutionary shit.
You look at, for example, in the music industry, where it isn't about how many albums you sell, but how many times your single was streamed on a platform. You see how it's just slightly changing.
And I stand to be corrected on this, but I think a big part of Michael Jackson's success with Thriller was that it was a kick-ass Michael Jackson song at the height of Michael Jackson's power, and it was the first, like, it was like he hit the music video. Was a new novel thing, and he got it.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he also start that whole thing of music videos suddenly being mini movies? Mm. Like 7-minute long music
and
videos. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Huge production value, and like, you know, like, I think, yeah, it was, again, my point. It's to do with a new thing at the same time as a good product.
It's all about what the trend is at that time.
But guys, how about this for an alarming stat? Mm-hmm. Finding Dory.
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Is higher than Finding Nemo.
No, that can't
most
be right.
Grossing. It's good. This is correct.
How can more people have gone to watch the sequel than watch the first movie?
Exactly. Huh. It's the power of it's the power of Ellen.
Was it good? I remember when they announced they were finally making a Finding Nemo sequel. I was so excited. I was like, yes, this is going to be the best. And it came and went, and I ignored it.
Well,
was it good?
It came, went, and surpassed Finding Nemo.
But was it of quality?
I didn't watch the sequel.
Just Finding Nemo.
I didn't really make much for me. I still like Finding Nemo better. But I think it goes into this whole thing because once again, they factor all of these different things with this figure. I think it's looking at merchandising and it's looking at how many times. I don't know, Ellen probably told her audience to go out there so that they could win a free Ellen t-shirt.
Yeah.
They probably got a new generation of kids that like just think it's a new thing. They were like, they're like 7 now when this movie comes out. They want to watch it. They weren't born when Finding Nemo was out. Something like that, maybe. I just finished my Harry Potter catch. I've got one more to watch. I've got the Deathly Hallows Part 2 to watch, and I've read all the books and I've watched all the movies, and it only took me until like 3-4 months ago to... I want to talk about Harry Potter, for God's sake. Anyway, I'm going to make my point is that Harry Potter, the acting in Harry Potter is so appalling. I'm amazed it didn't kill the franchise.
Yeah, but the thing is, this book geeks like you, they just had to go and see that because the bad acting was almost half the appeal. It's like, oh, this is useless. Because you've read the book, you've got an understanding of what's going to go on.
No, I mean, just in terms of casting child actors, their child actors give them a little bit of leeway. These are just the worst child actors that have ever been cast for anything. And I only found that out after I started watching them. It's not why
it's
I went to
watch them. It's a strong statement to make.
That's just
a very strong statement.
They get better as they go along, but man.
There's a lot of ginger hate in there as well, huh?
It's all of them. Emma Watson's all right. The rest suck. They're just bad acting.
Okay.
For such a big thing.
Okay. Woo.
Well, no.
Today was a good day.
You stuck with them after the first one. Like, you can't just go, okay, they're terrible actors. We'll change them completely for episode 3.
Oh, some franchises do.
They didn't with Potter. They should have.
Oh, sure. Okay. Never mind.
All right. Well, Mubs, anything else you want to add for the day of affairs?
No. I'm
done. Can you wrap it up by at least agreeing to what Ben was saying about Black Panther? Trailer?
Oh, no,
we're done with that.
Apparently,
it's just sad that they don't see your point, Ben.
Sorry, we can't get through the messages. Some guy's spamming us about a movie here. We're on and on and on. Okay, we'll get to messages tomorrow. Okay.
What?
Well,
why aren't you doing them now?
We got talking about a movie, and then this guy's promoting his own movie, and then there was all kinds of other messages and stuff.
You still have time.
Gordon, who's running the show here?
Clearly not. Sweeping generalizations. I don't want to read the messages.
Screw them. Yeah. Okay, Ben.
Yes, well, I was going to segue nicely into some strong current affairs that are currently plaguing this country and tell you that tomorrow Justice Malala will be here to discuss the mall.
Yay.
Which would have been both professional and topical, but you stole my thunder.
Which mall? You said he's going to be here to discuss them all.
Them all.
God derails the day.
Yeah, God, well done. You've derailed the day. Stay with us, though, because what we do, you've obviously picked this up from the last few months, is that because we've had so many great interviews and the fact that Gareth is not a robot, we've kind of replaying a few of the really good ones, of which many of them are. So Richard Callan is up next. He's the Associate Professor in Public Law at and he's an author.
Yes, he has been.
Interestingly typed on the running order. With the feeling that South Africans continue to balance on a knife edge politically, Gareth's interview with political analyst Richard Calland could not be more appropriate right now. This is why we replay these good interviews. Author, columnist, and founder member of the Council of the Advancements of South African Constitution, Calland's at the forefront of what is happening right now with the state capture to unrest at tertiary education campuses. These all problems aren't really going away, so this interview will be very good for you. Yesterday we had a great interview, though, about human rights, what's happening in Venezuela. Just go on to cliffcentral.com, go to Gareth's guest. There are so many great interviews in there currently on the rotation, and I think Gareth's been particularly busy with Sierra as well, actually. Between the two of them, they've been sourcing great interviews, all for your listening enjoyment.
Yeah. I just wanted to big up the Jordan Peterson interview. I downloaded it and listened to it while I was traveling the week before last, and it was really, really good. So if you haven't already checked that out, download Gareth interviewing Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, I actually just started reading his new book.
I bought it, but I've got to finish Sapiens first, so I'm also excited to read that. The interview sold at least one book.
Well, God, see, that's it. That's very, very nice, isn't it? From me, Ben Karpinski, from Mabani Maloy, from Sia Sangweni, and from Young Gordon Laws. That's it for today. We'll catch you back tomorrow.
Play yourself out.
We could have read the messages.
And then what would we have done with the Usher song?
Yeah. It's not a 7-minute song, Ben. Usher, right?
There's so much to learn still, Gord. And I'm not just talking microphone technique.
But I won't learn what's in the messages. Say, no limit. Got that masterpiece. No limit, baby. Dig it that black car. No limit. Just know when you're rolling it like me, there's no limit, baby. Make it say, no limit. I see my murder that. No limit, baby. Dig it that ghetto. This is CliffCentral.com.